I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC, and this is the news. Our COVID economy, stimulus stalled, but Americans not giving in, retail optimism rising, holiday hiring up. How far can our resiliency carry us?
Early voting just seems like it makes a lot of sense.
The vote getting stronger. Historic early voting. New registration numbers. What it all means in the race for the White House. More COVID chaos on the gridiron. The Patriots canceled practice after another positive COVID test. How will this impact our Sunday football? Surging COVID cases across the country, overwhelming hospitals.
They're exhausted. We've been going at this for 9 months now.
The struggling frontline workers and the people most at risk. And good evening. We begin tonight with hope, a silver lining even, as another wave of COVID sweeps across our nation and big business and small brace for the fallout. There is a new and promising sign for our economy as we head into the weekend. The numbers are in and they show Americans are spending. Retail sales up sharply last month. We just got the numbers today, more than doubling the expectations. Shoppers spending big on clothes and accessories up 11%. Music and book sales jumped nearly 6%. Car sales up more than 3.5%. That's all good. And now the big test. Small businesses and big box stores are heading into a make or break holiday season with the virus bearing down now and no relief coming from Washington, at least not yet. CNBC's Kate Rogers has a look at how small businesses are trying to survive.
Small business owners like Kenya Joseph are seeing a boost in consumer spending firsthand. Joseph owns Perfect Blue Alchemy, an organic and vegan fragrance and personal care company that retails locally in Charlotte, North Carolina, and online. Joseph says business has picked up about 30%, beginning this summer, as shoppers flock to support black-owned businesses in the wake of the police killings of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. Customers have stuck with the brand since, Joseph says, investing in self-care during the pandemic, a trend she hopes continues into the holiday season.
I think that everybody really needs a break from everything that's been going on this entire year. We do a lot of gift sets. We're going to be adding even more than we had before.
Beyond Main Street, big box retailers are gearing up for the holidays as consumers lean even more into e-commerce and contactless options. Target bringing on 130,000 seasonal workers in line with last year's hiring. Walmart adding 20,000 to its fulfillment operations for the season, and Amazon last month announcing 100,000 full and part-time hiring opportunities across delivery, fulfillment, and more as its business booms. Another bright spot for small businesses this past week, Shep, as small business sentiment did tick up for the month of September. But remember, a lot of these companies and consumers are waiting on additional aid from Washington, and how that plays out into the upcoming holiday season remains to be seen. Shep?
Kate Rogers, thanks. So Americans are spending. That's a bright spot during this fragile recovery. CNBC senior economics correspondent Steve Liesman is here. Where are the pockets of strength, Steve?
So internet retail, Shep, is doing really well. We keep ordering stuff and having it delivered to our houses. Building materials and home improvement supplies, they're flying off the shelves because we keep fixing up the homes that were kind of stuck in here. Autos are doing well. All sorts of hobbies and sporting goods. Fender guitars can't keep enough axes in stock. But restaurants and department stores, they've come back a bit, but they're still struggling, Shep.
There's no stimulus. There's no disaster relief for people. So where are they going to get the money to spend, and what do you think the economy's about to do?
So people still have stimulus left over in their bank accounts, according to the data. That may not be true for some of the individually struggling families, of course, but overall American savings rates are very high. We seem to be using that right now to see ourselves through this period and to keep spending. The trouble for the months ahead are if those savings run down, if jobs don't come back in a strong way, then we're going to really have trouble on the retail front and in the overall economy.
What is the word on jobs? Is there data on that? Are they coming back or not?
Yeah, some places are coming back. They're coming back quite well. You have some areas that are hiring. For example, you can see in the data, retail trade has come back and leisure and hospitality. But let's just focus on retail trade, on leisure and hospitality for a second, Jeff, because it's interesting. 318,000 jobs came back in the month of September. That still leaves us north of 3 million jobs short of where we were in February in that particularly hard-hit industry. Same with retail trade, still running below. Most industries have not really come back, but some of them are showing warehousing's doing well, for example, that goes along with the internet retailing.
Hope. Steve Leisman, thanks for it. 18 days till the election now. President Trump and Joe Biden back on the campaign trail after those town halls last night. Right now, President Trump set to hold a rally in Macon, Georgia, after earlier stops in must-win Florida. Georgia hasn't turned blue since Bill Clinton won it back in 92. Candidate Trump snagged both states back in 2016. But polls show this is very tight. Joe Biden spent the day in battleground Michigan, slamming the president's response to COVID-19, accusing him of not doing enough to fight hate and racism in America. More than 22.5 million Americans have already voted early. Incredible and staggering for the analysts. Historic voter turnout keeps getting even bigger. Look at this. This is the line in Raleigh, North Carolina early today. We sped it up so that you could get a sense for how long the line is and show you how many people are there. Early voting got underway just yesterday, but North Carolina has already topped 1 million votes cast in person and by mail. Leanne Caldwell is in Raleigh talking to voters. Leanne, what's it like there today?
Hey, Shepard. So enthusiasm seems to be still extremely high. Polls closed for the second day of early in-person voting in just about 30 minutes. I'm at a place in Cary, North Carolina, a suburb of Raleigh. I just talked to the chief election judge. She said they just topped the number of voters that they had yesterday today. So, and there's still some time left. I spoke to a lot of voters about why they decided to come out and vote early, even some standing in lines in the rain. Here's what they had to say.
I remember a time when you couldn't vote early. So this is it's one of the finest hours you can do it. Get in there, cast your vote.
For me, there's just something about coming in person and voting. As long as I'm physically able, I want to be able to do that and just to really experience other people that are out here voting also.
And Shepard, North Carolina is a huge battleground state. Most political prognosticators say that the president can't win the presidency unless he wins North Carolina. Senate Republicans think that Senator Tom Tillis needs to win here so that Republicans can keep control of the Senate. Both sides are contesting it. Both sides think that they can win, and it's evident in their visits here. The president was here yesterday. Vice President Pence was here today. And Joe Biden just announced that he will be here Sunday, Shep.
Hey, for people who may still want to go out and early vote, is it orderly? Is it working?
It is. So long lines are often associated with voter suppression tactics, but I haven't heard any complaints of that yet here. There's 20 voter sites in Wake County alone. The lines, there's 25 voting little cubicles inside this one location here. It's just that so many people are coming out to vote, and so they tend to have some long lines.
Sure.
Some people on Twitter are saying there should be more polling places available, but they did increase them from 2016. Shepard.
No movement over that left shoulder since we've been watching. Leanne Caldwell, thanks so much. Now to Georgia, also posting historic early voting numbers there. According to Georgia's Secretary of State, more than 1 million people have already cast their ballots. Keep in mind, in-person voting just started on Monday. Blaine Alexander live at the State Farm Arena in Atlanta. Blaine?
Yeah, Shepard, you know, every single day since early voting has begun, we have seen records breaking here in the state of Georgia. A quick note about my location. This is the State Farm Arena, typically the home of Atlanta's NBA basketball team. But for this early voting process, it's been transformed into Georgia's largest early voting location. So you've been seeing hundreds of people coming in here, streaming in and out to cast their ballots. Now, let me put a little bit of this into context for you. You know, more than 1 million people have voted. That is about 17% of Georgia's registered voters. Some 7.58 million people registered to vote. So that means about 17% of them have already cast their ballot. And that's split between in-person voting and absentee ballots. But let's put that into context. What did it look like back in 2016? Well, back at this point in 2016, only about 538,000 people had cast their ballots at that point. So we have seen, Shepard, a 377% increase when it comes to voter turnout here in the state of Georgia. So those are numbers from the Secretary of State's office, and certainly what officials are wanting. They have been very desperate for people to vote, not on November 3rd, not necessarily, but they want people to use these 3 weeks of early voting leading up to actual election day so that they can ease some of the pressure that they're expecting to see when it comes to November 3rd and hoping to reduce those long lines and get people in and out quicker.
Shepard. Blaine, thanks. Developing news, and we've been watching a story out of Paris for the last few hours. Our teams there are getting us updates on a really horrible story. A man who police say took out a knife and cut off a school teacher's head. After that, teacher showed his students cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad. Cops got there and tell us they shot and killed the man and brought in a bomb squad to make sure the killer wasn't wearing any explosives. Matt Bradley sent this report from scene.
Yeah, Shep, well, people in this community are shocked by this. What happened was this 47-year-old school teacher at a local school here outside of Paris, he was decapitated by an unnamed man. That man then fled the scene, and when he refused to surrender to police in a neighboring town, they shot him dead. Now, police said that the motive behind this may have been that this teacher showed images, caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad to his class as part of a discussion about freedom of speech, and that actually some parents in the class complained last week about this teacher. I spoke with a young man who says that he was in that class and was there when he showed those pictures. Here's what he had to say.
C'est une caricature de Mohammed.
Okay, so he says that the teacher showed a caricature of the Prophet actually naked to the class.
Moi, après à certains élèves qui étaient choqués mais parlaient pas beaucoup.
He says he actually said to the teacher that he shouldn't be showing this to the students, these pictures. You know, Shep, this is just the latest incident to put this city very much on edge. Remember back in 2015, the Charlie Hebdo killings, along with the Bataclan killings, that was a very bloody year for Paris. Nearly 200 people died that year. And this is just the latest attack, actually, in just the last several weeks. Just a few weeks ago, a young man attacked two people in front of offices that he thought were the offices of that Charlie Hebdo publication. That publication has now been moved, and their current location has been kept secret. But the trial for all of those people, especially from those Charlie Hebdo attacks back in 2015, it's still ongoing. And as long as there's still threats, this city will remain on edge. Shep?
Matt Bradley from Paris tonight. A weather alert. We've watched as wildfires devastated lives of so many in Northern California. And tonight, threat on their livelihood. The personal side of Napa Valley wine business. And the rest of the news on a Friday night. I'm Shepard Smith at CNBC World Headquarters. It's great to have you with us. The largest wildfire in Colorado recorded history is about half contained tonight. More than 1,000 firefighters are reportedly battling the Cameron Peak Fire as it burns across northern Colorado. Forecasters are warning very strong winds could make things much worse this evening. Since yesterday, the fire has scorched another 9,000 acres. That's from the U.S. Forest Service. Roughly 100 homes and buildings damaged, and now they tell it's threatening communities near Rocky Mountain National Park. Right now, 260 square miles burned, an area nearly the size of New York City. Meantime, President Trump flip-flopping on sending wildfire relief to California. In a tweet, Governor Gavin Newsom wrote that the president approved his request for emergency aid. And that comes just hours after the Trump administration rejected the request for emergency aid. For the people of Napa and Sonoma counties, really all across wine country, the relentless wildfire season has scorched their land and threatened their livelihoods. But one family we found faced with destruction says in the end, they're still thankful for what they have. Here's CNBC's Aditi Roy.
Water in wine country. A familiar sight this summer as wildfires tore through Napa Valley, wrecking vineyards big and small, like this one at the top of Spring Mountain.
Watch the glass, babe.
I'm watching.
Les Behrens and his wife, Lisa Drinkward, are the owners of Behrens Family Winery. They fell for the rustic spot the first time they laid eyes on it.
20 acres.
20 acres.
Just kind of right on top here.
Yeah. There was nothing. There was no developed water, electricity, nothing. But we could immediately see the potential. We fell in love with it.
That was in 1998. Since then, the winery's grown up alongside the couple's five children. But 2 weeks ago, the flames arrived with little warning, scorching their vineyard and destroying most of their wine in production.
This is our 2020 Grenache from a vineyard in Windsor.
There's so little that remains in the ashes. Those file cabinets and these broken bottles. Some of them contain their favorite wines.
Napa has never seen a wildfire season like this one. In August, lightning strikes sparked another fire in the region.
And these are all just singed.
It ripped through Somerston Estate, which Craig Becker co-founded.
First real wildfire experience on my end. It looks just like it does on TV.
Most of his grapes weren't damaged by the flames. It was the smoke that got them in the end.
And you work really hard to get everything right for these vineyards, and you spend the whole season preparing for harvest, and to have that all just taken away literally in a 24-hour swath is it's pretty emotional for us as a winemaking team.
The losses here are deep.
Has it sunk in yet?
Probably not.
No.
But Les and Lisa say they're grateful for each other and for Ozzy, their grandson, born just as the fire started.
He'll have a story.
Oh, he'll have a story.
He'll have a story between COVID. He's our bright spot in 2020, between COVID and the fires and a lot of other things.
A bright spot, they say, and a reason to keep going. For the news, I'm Aditi Roy, Napa Valley, California.
It's 17 minutes past 6 o'clock right now in southwest Louisiana. And at this moment, 1 week ago today, the eye of Hurricane Delta was over Lake Charles. It made landfall live here as a powerful Category 2 storm just 6 weeks after Hurricane Laura devastated the region. Delta ripped apart buildings, but still covered in blue tarps from the last hurricane. It tore down power lines that had just been repaired. Hundreds of thousands of homes left in the dark during the pandemic, when people are told to stay home if they can. 1 week later, people are still on the long road to recovery. And our own Scott Cohn is live on the ground in Lake Charles tonight. Scott?
Hi, Shep. Scenes like this, of course, are all too common here, street after street and home after home. But not far from where I am, you will find the United Way of Southwest Louisiana's Hurricane Relief Center. There are cars as far as the eye can see. They've been going nonstop since September 4th, distributing supplies donated literally from around the world.
The donations come in here, and our folks can drive through our great tent and pick up the supplies they need, whether it's cleaning supplies or baby supplies, food.
Among the many volunteers here day in and day out is Renee LeBlue Booth from Lake Charles. She loves the work and the satisfaction she gets from helping her neighbors in need. But she also has a secret, unbeknownst to even her fellow volunteers until very recently. She, too, lost everything in the twin storms.
We went and looked, and it's just the roof is missing, and water's all in there, and it wasn't nice. Keeps my mind off of things. And working with some amazing women and men. I mean, I don't think about dealing with FEMA, the insurance companies. I don't have to listen about bricklayers or the roofers or, you know, it's nice. And when they say thank you, and whenever they tell me what they're going through, I'm very lucky.
Renee told us that she hates to leave at the end of the day. She loves the people that she works with and the people that she's helping. She's one of the reasons that Southwest Louisiana will get through this crisis. It's going to take a while, but Shep, they'll get there.
Scott Cohn, thanks so much. A woman in Michigan defies death threats three times, and paramedics in Florida chip in to help a war vet on this CNBC trip, coast to coast. New York. A stolen painting returned 87 years later. Authorities say Nazis looted it from a Jewish family in Berlin. Winter was one of more than 200 pieces taken from them. The family's remaining heirs finally got it back yesterday. They say they plan to auction it off. Arizona. A woman in Scottsdale was born missing part of her left arm. But that's not stopping her from playing music. She uses the end of her arm to strum her ukulele.
Ever since I was really little, I've learned to adapt, and whether it be crawling or, you know, picking up an instrument.
She credits her mom for encouraging her love of music. Florida. An 83-year-old man says he passed out while working in his yard. The paramedics who showed up treated him, then finished the mowing. The Vietnam vet says he never fully recovered from a stroke years ago. The Fort Lauderdale first responders say they appreciate his service to the country and wanted to show it. Michigan. An Ann Arbor woman beating the coronavirus after 196 days in the hospital. She tested positive back in March and was on a ventilator for months. Doctors say they called in her family three times, expecting for them to say goodbye, but each time she bounced back. Family and friends celebrated yesterday as she left the hospital, part of this CNBC trip, coast to coast. Here's one for you. Mexico's former defense secretary, Wright, was also the godfather of one of that nation's most violent drug cartels. We just learned this in the last couple of hours. Hear this. Federal prosecutors here in the United States took the guy down. His name is Salvador Cienfuegos, and he was busted last night at LAX. The indictment unsealed this afternoon shows he's charged with money laundering. Federal agents say cartels referred to the general as the godfather. In exchange for money, Cienfuegos, who was the leader of Mexico's army, allegedly sicked his soldiers on H2 rivals. In other words, he put the army against the cartel's cartel rivals. And the feds say he helped them navigate their drug-filled ships in Mexican waters. Cienfuegos served in the country's highest-ranking military official for 6 years. So no, there is no corruption in Mexico. We've been reporting tonight and for the past few days, really, on early voting happening across the nation in record numbers. But let's drill down now. Who's voting? And what does the polling tell us about who they're voting for? Steve Kornacki has the data for us. Hi, Steve.
Hey, Shep. Yeah, I mean, we talk about Election Day. It really is election month because look at this. Almost 20 million votes have already been cast in this election. As of today, this is the number of ballots that have been filled out by voters and returned. These are basically mail ballots. To put this in some perspective, we're already at 14% of the total number of votes that were cast in the 2016 election. And we're in the middle of October. And again, we've never seen this many votes this early. This is 313%. We are at 313%, the number of votes that have been cast early at this point in 2016. So this is just a record pace. These are record numbers. And there is also a big imbalance here when you talk about which party's voters are coming out for this. Democrats, 47% of the ballots requested nationally, only 30% Republicans. Remember, you talk about Donald Trump, who's urged his voters to go on Election Day, not to be voting early, not to be voting by mail as much. In Florida, similar trend, 49-30. This lines up with the polling we've seen. This is our NBC Wall Street Journal poll this week. We asked folks who said they plan to vote early or by mail. How do you plan to vote? Look at that. Yeah, almost a 40-point lead there for Joe Biden over Trump. But then again, Trump tells his supporters, go out and vote on Election Day. The voters who say they're going to do that, almost a mirror image, 65-31 Trump.
You know, that almost feels like it's foreshadowing this situation that everybody's been talking about, Steve. You know, one side wins early and then they count the rest of the votes.
And it really becomes, this is a thing to watch on election night for folks, because different states are going to do this differently, even different counties are. But which one of these buckets are they counting their votes from first? Because there are going to be some states that count the early and the mail-in vote first, and they release those numbers first. In those states, Biden's probably going to jump out to a really big lead, even if the late-counted vote swings it the other way. And there are going to be states that count their Election Day vote first. Trump could jump out to a big lead, and then it might be later that night. It might be days. It might be a week later when they finally count all that mail-in vote. And it tells a different story.
Right. We're talking early voters at the moment. But what about voter registration? Indications that Republicans are really gaining ground there.
Here's some interesting, we've seen this in a number of states here the last few months, Republicans adding new voters to the rolls. Let's take the big picture view. Let's look at Florida. This is one of the states where Republicans have gained some late ground in the last few months. In 2016 on Election Day, this is the voter registration. Democrats outnumbered Republicans. It was tight, but it was a 3-point advantage for Democrats. Remember, Florida usually doesn't get more competitive than Florida. It's tightened. This doesn't look like much, but this is significant. It was a 3-point edge in registration for Democrats 4 years ago. Now it's down to a 1-point edge for Democrats over Republicans in Florida. So again, this is one of the things the Trump campaign's been talking about when they say they still have a chance. They think they've added some new voters to this late in the process that could change things a little bit.
We know that the numbers are enormous for early voting. We've never seen anything like it. But is there anything to indicate that real voter turnout is going to be a percentage like we haven't seen before? Or what are you seeing?
Yeah, I'll put that right back up there. The 18 million that have come in right now, I can tell you the total number of votes that were cast in 2016 was 137 million. We're already, as I said, outpacing vastly where we were in 2016. We also had in 2018 a midterm election that shattered, absolutely shattered what we'd ever seen before turnout midterm-wise. There are folks who say 150 million votes cast in this election is not unrealistic.
That's incredible. More vote, the better. Be heard, whatever you want to say. Steve, thank you.
Thanks.
A plan to deliver vaccines to nursing homes. The two companies stepping up to help people free of charge if, in fact, there ever is a vaccine for COVID-19. And cases continue to rise. Staggering numbers. 39 states. We're on the ground in Utah, where hospitalizations are spiking in a frightening way. Meanwhile, the governor of New Mexico calling this the most serious emergency New Mexicans have ever faced. And Kentucky's governor with a warning of his own.
This is our third escalation. It is our most serious one yet. It will result in the most deaths that we have seen. And by now, if you don't know someone that's lost someone, then you're not asking them.
I'm Shepard Smith on CNBC. It's the bottom of the hour. Time for the top of the news. Another grim milestone. More than 8 million Americans infected by COVID-19. It took only 3 weeks to add another 1 million cases. That's from Johns Hopkins. Another sign the fall surge is right here. The virus is hitting Utah particularly hard. Daily cases spiked 8% over the past week, the second highest single-day increase of the pandemic, and nearly 100 new patients admitted in ICUs across the state, the highest number in nearly 3 months. Aaron McLaughlin near Salt Lake City on the top story at the bottom of the hour. Aaron, what's driving the surge?
Hey, Shep. Well, it seemed as though Utah had been spared the worst of the pandemic, but a few weeks ago, the state saw a spike in the 15 to 24-year-old demographic start coinciding with the start of the school season. The COVID-19 virus then spread to older populations, leading to what now is a record number of hospitalizations. Still, no suggestion from state health officials that they're looking to shut anything down. Indoor dining is still an option here. Bars are open. Even the high school football season still in play. School is in session, except for the one behind me. This high school was shuttered due to a COVID-19 outbreak. Some 15 students confirmed with the virus. I spoke with the principal earlier today, and she was telling me that she thinks that in-person learning is necessary, that high school football is necessary. Take a listen.
I see all of the benefits for our students, for our high school population across. I have very strong feelings about this, that students need to be in school. They need to see each other. They need to have that emotional support. They need to be actively involved in things. We just need to make the mandates to keep everybody under the circumstances as safe as we possibly can.
Now, state officials just this week announced a data-driven approach focused on mask wearing, making masks mandatory inside state hotspots, also strongly suggesting, and in some hotspots, requiring that people limit their social gatherings, visiting friends and family, to no more than 10 people. Health officials here acknowledge that this strategy relies on people voluntarily complying with these new mandates. Shep.
Aaron McLaughlin, thanks. No COVID vaccine from Pfizer until at least after the election. The company today reports it will not know for a while whether any vaccine is effective. If all goes well and there is no guarantee, it could apply for emergency use authorization in late November. The CEO detailed the timeline in an open letter emphasizing safety, saying standards are set high. The safety reviews will dictate whether a vaccine is ever available. If a vaccine is one day approved, nursing homes will get it free of charge. Federal health officials outlining that plan today. The logistics are daunting, no doubt. There are more than 22,000 such facilities across the country. To help, CVS and Walgreens have agreed to administer the vaccine. The voluntary program is part of the government's so-called Operation Warp Speed. Some hopeful news on a vaccine, but hospitalizations are rising, up 20% this month alone. More than 37,000 total, the highest level since late August. The last time we saw an increase like this was June to July, when we were rising to peak numbers. ICU admissions also the highest since late August, rising 17% this month, more than 7,000 total. Dr. Ashish Jha is with us now. He's Dean of Brown University's School of Public Health. Dr. Jha, thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me on.
Could you give us an understanding, almost the visual we can't get ourselves, of what happens when a hospital becomes overstressed? You've canceled elective surgeries, beds are full, medical professionals start to feel the overload of very sick people. What's that like?
Yeah, Shep, you know, people sometimes think it's just about hospital beds, and obviously it is about hospital beds. They start running out. We start having people in the hallways. But there is a stress that physicians and nurses start to feel. You know, you have the patient who really could benefit from the ICU. There's only one ICU bed left. And so do you use it for this person, or do you wait for that critically ill patient who might walk in through the door? That is hard enough on any one given evening. If you're doing that all day, all night, every shift, you're rationing, you're choosing who gets to get the ICU care that's going to save their lives and who's not. That just wears on people. And one of the things that you can't easily replace is all the physicians and nurses and the staff who make a hospital run. And I think people don't get a sense of the stress that that creates and how difficult it is to work in that environment.
You know, I have a couple of friends in New York City who dealt with that exact reality back when we were the hot spot of the whole world. And, you know, I'm not sure they've fully recovered from that trauma.
Oh, I mean, we've seen physicians who've committed suicide after going through what has been an awful, awful experience. We've seen physicians and nurses have PTSD-like symptoms. This is horrible, and this is what we have to avoid. And of course, it's all avoidable. If people did the things like wearing masks and avoiding large indoor gatherings, it would make a huge difference. Yeah. But that's unfortunately not what's happening in many parts of the country, and so we're seeing what we're seeing.
Dr. Jha, you and your colleagues have come to understand the novel coronavirus better as you've been able to study it. And many school systems are shut down. We just heard from the administrator just a moment ago saying, we need our kids to have something to do. They need to be around others. They need their sports. They need it. Are doctors rethinking this, shut it all down?
Absolutely, Shep. And I feel like over time, as evidence has come in, I have also become more and more convinced we've got to get kids back into school. Look, kids were not born to Zoom in for 8 hours a day. What I've been saying to policymakers is you have a choice. You can have schools open or you can have bars open. You probably can't have both open. And as far as I'm concerned, it's a no-brainer. Open the schools and close the bars.
Dr. Jha, so good to see you. Hoping for the best. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Shep.
All right. Winter, snow holidays, warm fireplaces. Sounds pretty good, but this year could also mean the end of outdoor dining, how one restaurant is getting creative to try to solve that problem, and one man in Louisiana sentenced to life in prison for stealing hedge clippers. This is real. He's finally walked out more than 23 years later, and that's next.
The facts, the truth, the news with Shepard Smith. Back in 90 seconds.
Practice his name for it. Meet a girl who's a student by day and a young Captain Planet by night. Plus, a decade-long nuclear treaty is set to expire as we go around the world in 80 seconds.
Russia. Vladimir Putin proposed extending a nuclear pact with the United States for at least another year. The New START treaty limits the number of nuclear warheads, missiles, and bombers that both countries can deploy. The pact was signed back in 2010. If Moscow and Washington don't act, it expires in February. India. Meet Lisi Priya. She's a 9-year-old climate crusader staying up way past her bedtime. She staged a midnight protest calling for action to tackle climate change in India.
I want our leaders to take immediate climate action.
The latest World Air Quality Report ranks New Delhi as one of the planet's worst polluting cities. Finland. Most tourists can't see Santa's unofficial hometown this year. Blame COVID the Grinch. But St. Nick and his little helpers making the best out of a not-so-jolly year. The elves wearing masks while working at the gift shop. The kids telling Santa what they want for Christmas, but from behind plexiglass. Australia. Don't blink or you'll miss it. That's a kangaroo skipping across a train station in the country's capital. Local officials embracing the moment, telling commuters, don't be like Skippy and stay on the designated footpaths. A good reminder as we go around the world in 80 seconds.
The coronavirus pandemic creating a seismic shift in the restaurant industry. According to the National Restaurant Association, nearly 1 in 6 is closed, either long-term or for good. New York City alone, they tell us, could lose 12,000 restaurants to the pandemic. That's according to the state controller. Take a live look on Bleecker Street in Greenwich Village tonight. Raining most of the day, only 53 degrees right now, yet New York streets have been packed since the summer. And as you can see, they're out and about under the sort of covering tonight. It's bustling, it's fun, there's music. A bright spot in so much darkness. Friends and families outside with their masks, but like I said, it rained all day and temperatures are dropping across a large chunk of the country. So restaurants are going to have to be mighty creative to keep their doors open. CNBC's Contessa Brewer is in Poughkeepsie, New York, with a restaurant owner who's doing exactly that. Hey, Contessa.
Hi there, Shep. Nice to see you. It is not a nice night out. It's raining right now, and it's cold, and winter is coming. You know, a lot of people don't want to sit indoors, though, because of coronavirus, and there are capacity restrictions. So here at Paula's Public House in Poughkeepsie, they're doing everything possible to make patio dining palatable.
I had to buy heaters, then I have to have propane. All of those things wind up costing you more money.
If necessity is the mother of invention, restaurateurs like Paula Young Bora are modern-day Thomas Edisons.
It's like taking a bottle cap and a piece of gum and a string and a grapefruit rind and stringing them together and wearing it as a necklace and saying, isn't it pretty?
They're creating new ways to capture customers. Along Chicago's Fulton Market, bubbles are popping up.
I think it's a great idea. People need to think outside the box this year.
In San Francisco, an icy drink in an igloo. And in New York City, pasta in a plastic pod.
This looks like Cinderella's cabbage. It's beautiful. I like it.
Despite restaurants' best efforts, overall sales for the industry are down 34% from a year ago. And 38% of operators say they'll likely close for good if business conditions don't improve. With indoor dining capacity restrictions still in effect in many states, restaurants have relied on the outdoors to make the numbers work.
That translates into 20 seats only. And that really is not going to make it financially if I only can survive on the indoor.
Paula's business is down 80% from last year. She's begging government leaders to come up with a plan to help.
We are restaurateurs, which means we restore you. Someone needs to restore us.
Paula is so intent on extending this outdoor dining season as long as she can. She stocked up on $5 blankets. She offers them to her customer, Shep, for $5.50, the 50 cents to cover her taxes.
Oh, wow. Contessa Brewer in Poughkeepsie, thanks so much. Is bacon a meat? Not technically. I know because my stepmom spent 30 years as a dietitian in a school system, and that school system categorized bacon as a fat, not a meat. But man, it smells so good. Mmm, bacon. Well, now you can smell it all day if you want. Hormel, the company of Spam and other deli treats, is now selling bacon-scented face masks. They call it revolutionary, featuring the latest in pork-scented technology. You go, Hormel. Hawaii is open for tourists again, but in COVID times, nothing is ever easy, even in the Aloha State. The testing and the travel next. And a warning for Peloton owners. Have you heard this? A potential recall on thousands of bikes. Record deficit, right? And there are still Americans, millions of them, who need government aid. That's what's topping CNBC's On the Money. $3.1 trillion. That's the final budget deficit for 2020. Yoo-hoo! Tripling last year's as government spending increases. The total debt? $27 trillion. But there's a bright spot. Record low bond yields, which means the cost to service all that debt came down. Borrowing is almost free, so those who have a lot can get a lot more for almost nothing. A voluntary recall for Peloton. Hear this? The pedals used on about 27,000 of the older exercise bikes have issues now, they tell us. Multiple reports of injury. Five of those injuries, and I'm quoting, required medical care such as stitches to the lower leg. That's from the Consumer Product Safety Commission. And Tab Cola, you will be missed. Coca-Cola's first diet soda, introduced in 1963, is among the drinks headed for retirement. Coke has been trimming brands to focus on its bigger and more popular products. Diet Coke showed up in 82, and Tab took a back seat. A small but loyal number of Tab fans remains, apparently, according to the company. Other products get any axe? Odwalla, Zico Coconut Water, what? Coca-Cola Life, and Diet Coke Feisty Cherry. Good grief. Oh, but Tab Cola, a beautiful drink for beautiful people. 16 ounces and just one calorie, Tab. You're dope, but you're done. On Wall Street, the Dow kicking a three-day losing streak, up 112. S&P barely changed, the NASDAQ lower by a third of a percent. All three higher on the week, despite a late-day sell-off. Industrials right on top. Aloha and mahalo, unless you're COVID positive, of course. Hawaii is allowing tourists back into the islands without quarantining for 2 weeks if they can prove that they tested negative for coronavirus. About 8,000 people flew in on the first day of Hawaii's new pre-travel testing program. It's an effort to jumpstart Hawaii's tourism-based economy after the pandemic devastated it. From Atlanta to New England and now Indianapolis, COVID causing more chaos in the NFL. A source telling the Associated Press another member of the Patriots tested positive for COVID. I don't know which. It forced the team to cancel practice today. And the Colts announced that four people tested positive this morning. Then they tested them again later, and then those ones were actually negatives. The league allowed the Colts to reopen its facilities this afternoon. And in college, the Alabama-Georgia game is still set to square off at Bryant-Denny tomorrow. Bama's head coach Nick Saban says he's, quote, feeling great after testing positive for COVID this week. He's been running practice remotely, but they won't let him call any shots tomorrow remotely, and he is displeased. Under NCAA's rules, only people in the press box can talk to coaches and players down on the field. You can't do it on Zoom. And oh, I bet you Saban is fit to be tied. Imagine being sentenced to life in prison for stealing hedge clippers. That happened to a black man in Louisiana. Here he is, Fair Wayne Bryant, did 23 years. Parole board says he can go home now, thank you. He was convicted of burglary back in 1997. So why the harsh sentence? Louisiana's habitual offender law. Bryant already had four felonies under his belt at the time. He'll be the first to enter a new program in Baton Rouge that helps prisoners adjust to life outside. Freedom after 23 years for hedge clippers. No legs, no limits. Words Kane Assessor lives by.
I feel like even with legs, I'd probably be the same Kanye.
Her story starts with a dust-covered pink blanket. Took her to the set of a TV series, and it's far from over. her story and a live chat straight ahead. Well, that was... Got a friend who really inspires you? You know, somebody who just seems to overcome any obstacle and just keeps shooting for even more greatness? Our friends at Telemundo 40 in McAllen, Texas, met up with a woman who checks all those boxes. She's an athlete born with no legs, no fear, and no limits.
I'm Kanya Sesser, and I was born without legs. I started skateboarding when I was like 9 years old and surfing when I was 9 years old. I was born an athlete, even without legs, with or without legs. And I feel like even with legs, I'd probably be the same Kanya. My mom and dad, Jane and Dave Sesser, and they have two birth kids of their own. I'm the only adopted one. I'm the youngest. She went all the way to Thailand to pretty much pick me up. She never went be like, I feel sad for her that she has no legs. Let me take her in. No, it was like, she has potential in life and I'm going to give it to her. The Walking Dead, I'm a stunt performer and a zombie for them. So pretty much I do really deadly stunts and I jump out of cars and I go on in front of a semi truck 45, 50 miles per hour while strapped in on literally nothing. Women, men with any type of like lifestyle and capabilities, disabilities, mental abilities, I feel like we have so much power as a human that we can create. I just love connecting with other people who's just like me. So because we can all impact the world and change world and show people that like, yo, nothing stops us. And I feel like anything's possible and life is just possible and like no legs, no limits, you know?
No legs, no limits. Kanya Sesser is with us live. Kanya, it is so nice to meet you. Where do you get this energy?
I think it's just me. I'm like an Energizer Bunny. I just love life and
tell me what Kanya Sesser loves to do besides the skateboard. What really gets you going?
Like skateboarding I think gets me going, but also I like to create and I love jet skiing and doing many different things and show that anything's possible. Just live my life. I just do it.
I don't have to tell you, for people with legs, when you meet somebody like you for the first time, sometimes you don't know quite what to do. What do you tell us?
I say you never really know unless you actually do it and just go for it. Because if you overthink things without doing it, then you will never really know and you're just fearing yourself. You have to get through that fear and just, you know, whatever that's comfortable and fun, you know, you might like skydiving, but then you do it and you're like, oh my God, so cool.
Yeah, I bet it is. But hey, who inspired you when you were young and figuring out life?
To be honest, when I started like skateboarding and all that, or just sports, no one really inspired me to do it. I just do it. And I thought it was so cool how different I was than everybody else. And I was just like, heck yeah. Oh my goodness, this is so fun. Everyone just looks at me like in shock and surprise. And they're like, wow, what made you do it? I'm just like, I don't know. I just go for it. I just do it myself. My first attempt was going downhill on a skateboard and like wobbled out on my board and hurt myself. But I was like, I got back up and I was like, oh my gosh, that was so awesome. And I just started.
Kanya Sesser. It's the perfect way to begin the weekend. Thank you. It's so nice to meet you. We are 40 seconds on a race to the finish. President Trump reversing his decision to deny disaster money to California for last month's devastating wildfires. The governor there says he spoke to the president on the phone and he agreed to send aid. Last month's fires destroyed thousands of homes and buildings in devastated parts of the wine country, killing at least three people. And three numbers to leave you with before we head into the weekend. 8, 18, and 22. 8 million, the sad milestone we crossed today in America with COVID. 18, the number of days till the general election. And 22 million and counting, the record amount of people who have already cast their vote. And we've still got weeks to go. And now, You know the news. For this Friday, October the 16th, 2020, I'm Shepard Smith. Enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. You've been listening to the CNBC podcast, The News with Shepard Smith. You can always catch us live weekdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC.